Hello, and welcome to the Let's Talk Attachments podcast. My name is Jessica Da Silva, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and an attachment coach, helping adults end their unhealthy dating patterns and create stronger, secure relationships. Attachment theory gives us insight into how we currently experience love through understanding our earlier attachment dynamics. I created this podcast as a safe space to share stories and insights on different aspects of attachment so that you can better understand how this manifests in your own life. My only request is that you listen with an open heart and an open mind. So without further ado, let's get into it. Today on the podcast, we have Dr. Holly Batchelor, a Seattle-based licensed clinical psychologist who specializes in anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and relationship obsessive compulsive disorder, using evidence-based practices and compassion to empower her clients. Her focus on exposure therapy, mindfulness, and emotional regulation equips individuals with effective coping strategies for a fulfilling life. Passionate about overall wellness, Dr. Holly focuses on the latest psychological research for effective care. And today, I get to pick her brain on many questions you have been wondering regarding the difference between relationship anxiety and relationship OCD, how it manifests in our lives, and what to do about it. So without further ado, let's jump into the episode. You obviously, well, what I wanted to focus on specifically for this conversation is relationship OCD. You know, the work that I do is centered around attachment theory specifically, and so much of it is rooted in relationship anxiety. So I know my community and myself just want to better understand, you know, what is the difference between anxiety and OCD? How does it manifest in our life and our relationships primarily? And how do we better navigate it? But before we get into it, if you don't mind kind of just sharing a little bit about you and how you got into this work.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Holly Batchelder. I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. I am based in Washington State. I did my training in California, and a relevant place for me for my pre-doctoral internship was in Colorado. I know you're from there too. Oh, yeah. In the Denver area. And really, really enjoyed working with anxiety disorders. One, because it's so common, and two, there are treatments that can be really effective for it too. It's also something that I always struggled with my entire life. And so it was really helpful to be someone who could engage in that treatment for myself and then also really make a difference in my clients' lives. When I started my postdoctoral fellowship here in Seattle, I started my work in an anxiety clinic, and in that specialization was obsessive and compulsive disorders, specific phobias, a lot of different, very specific, more generalized anxiety. But I somehow found my way into being a specialist for relationship OCD. And when a lot of my colleagues had clients who had relationship-centered OCD, they found themselves kind of referring to me. And that kind of became my unofficial expertise specialization. I think there's a lot of reasons why I got into that. Just like briefly, I was single at the time. I was dating during the pandemic. I was dealing with a bad breakup, you know, long-term breakup, and was really trying to navigate kind of just modern dating after being in a long-term relationship, and finding that relationship anxiety or relationship OCD, which I'll kind of specify the differences, was becoming really common and almost more normal. How can you not be anxious as a single person or even someone in a relationship or long-term relationship when there's so much uncertainty, especially if you have a lot of pressure and a lot of value into your relationships or the partner you're with? So that's kind of how I got into it. And then I can kind of share a little bit more.
Yeah. Ooh, I love it. And Yes, I have even a personal question that I want to ask because you mentioned
Sure.
uncertainty, and uncertainty really is what kind of fuels our anxiety, you know, like, oh my God, is our partner going to be with, are we going to stay together forever? Is this going to work out? Are they going to like us? Are they going to, you know, not? So anyways, I want to get into kind of, you know, how do you navigate that rumination when we kind of get into it? But if you can start by just kind of telling us what is OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder?
Sure. So OCD requires both things, or actually technically one of them, but OCD requires obsessions, right? We call it obsessions, but this is really intrusive thoughts, really unwanted images or thoughts. We all have intrusive thoughts. That's just something we get 1,000 a day. But for someone who has OCD, those are very consuming and they cause a lot of distress or anxiety. And for most people, in order to alleviate that distress, you know, of the unwanted image, the thought, this, and they're always unwanted, that's important. But for most people, we need to alleviate that some way. And that's where we have compulsion. So that's the C part of OCD.
Got
And
it.
then compulsions really range from seeking reassurance. You know, if we think about one of the most common types of OCD, which is like contamination focus, that would be like that kind of more like stereotypical, like cleaning, washing hands many, many times, checking our doors. The more stereotypical, I guess, symptoms, right, which are more common, are not as, it's not really what I've seen so much in my experience or in my clinic or now in my private practice. There's a lot of mental compulsions, which look like excessively analyzing our thoughts, excessively analyzing our behaviors. And just to get very specific on relationship-centered OCD, we have those obsessions, which are usually what I see, persistent doubts and worries about the relationship. It sounds like a common thing, but for it to not be just like kind of regular relationship anxiety, it has to be causing a level of distress to the point where it's really time-consuming. And the DSM-5, the definition is more than an hour is spent with obsessions or compulsions. But I usually see folks who it's really time-consuming all day long. The compulsions in relationship OCD look like reassurance seeking. So constantly asking your partner, is this a, you know, do you love me? Do you think this is the right relationship? Sometimes we see confessions. So, oh man, I just thought about so and so or the celebrity and I think they're really hot. Is that okay? There's a lot of, I guess, just excessively analyzing what that person said, how they look. I see a lot of folks who will talk about the, how there's even some avoidance. So I won't look at certain pictures of other people or my partner. So to backtrack just for a second, there are two types of relationship OCD that I usually see. And sometimes people have both, but it's really easy to categorize between person-centered. So person-centered, I mean partner-centered. So the focus is on one's partner. Does my partner like me? Is this a right partner for me? And there's a lot of doubt around the partner. And then there's self-focused. Am I choosing the right person? Am I making a bad decision? The doubts become very internalized. Is there something wrong with me? Am I going to hurt this person? And sometimes I see a combination of the two of those, but it can be helpful to kind of categorize between them. So that's just kind of like an overall base of OCD, but I can also share the difference between relationship OCD, relationship anxiety, and then just like what's our kind of common, normal anxiety.
Yes. Ooh, this is so good. I actually a little while back, I looked for a therapist to focus specifically on relationship OCD because I mean, not only do I treat it, but these are things that I experience as well. And as therapists or clinicians, coaches, it's hard to recognize these things in yourself because you're always so focused on others and treating others.
Yes.
But anyways, this is everything that you just mentioned is what I was kind of experiencing. It was both focused on my partner and also focused on myself. So is he the right one? Are we compatible? Does he meet my needs? Right? To wait a second, am I sabotaging this relationship? Am I the problem? And then my compulsion was I would go on Google and I would
Oh,
read
yeah.
stories. Like that was my physical action that I would take. Is that so? Is that pretty common, like people researching things, going to different therapists or different resources,
Sure.
would you say?
I have certainly seen a lot of clients who didn't know that they met the criteria for relationship OCD. And once they were able to kind of get that correct diagnosis, there was a lot of empowerment. And we could find a very direct treatment. And the treatment is exposure and response prevention, which is very challenging. And it's not for everyone because of the amount of work that it requires and the commitment. But I would say that the most common compulsions are the ones that are so readily available for our generation, which is internet. Googling. I find Reddit to be great source, but can be a really great like breeding ground for more compulsions for my clients, and any type of OCD. But for relationship OCD, there is a lot of forums that can kind of create that uncertainty. But also, the idea of compulsions are that it relieves anxiety. So in the moment, it feels really great to like find that answer in Google. Oh, cool! I'm not the only one who is sabotaging their relationship. There's a lot of other people who are struggling with this. So in a way, that sounds great, right? One, we want to find community. One, we want to relieve our anxiety. We don't want to be at like a, 9 out of 10 anxiety all the time. And if we're recognizing this pattern, or if we can figure out that there's a pattern going on, we're actually getting stuck in this like very pervasive loop, this cycle. And in order to break that, which is really hard, we have to sit with the anxiety sometimes. And that's really what exposure and response prevention. We're exposing ourselves to that fear. Maybe the fear is imaginal. Maybe the fear is, oh shoot, I might end up alone, or I might be choosing the wrong partner. We have to sit with that uncertainty, maybe, maybe not, and then avoid, right, the response prevention, not ask my partner, hey, do you think we're gonna work out? Do you think that, or just Googling, how do I know if I'm the one? Want to break that cycle. And that peace, that freedom looks like, okay, I can go to sleep at night knowing that the partner I'm sleeping next to, right, may or may not be the one for me. There might be other people out there for me. And this is the person who's right for me right now. Can I make peace with that? Can I enjoy a life that's meaningful? And just, can I be in the present with this person? Do I love them? I know that, but do I know that it's going to work out forever? No. We don't. Can we be okay with that? So that's where I'll see people at the end of treatment feeling like, okay, you're right, Dr. Holly. I felt I'm not spending hours and hours and hours Googling, my symptoms or my thoughts or trying to get reassurance. But I do feel more at peace. I don't know the answer. I don't know if this relationship is going to be forever, but I can sleep at night and I can start to plan my future a little bit too.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So, would you say that the compulsion, like it becomes a problem when you mentioned in the DSM, if you are kind of like ruminating or engaging in this compulsion for an hour or more, is that when it becomes a problem? Like, let's say that you're experiencing anxiety, you have some uncertainty, you go on Google just to, or you read a self-help book, you listen to a podcast, because those are things I know that are really helpful to kind of like
Of
affirm
course.
ourselves and, validate ourselves. But when does it become that problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because one, we don't want to over-pathologize ourselves, right? Totally, totally unfair to, of course, analyze even more like our symptoms and tracking how long it takes. Like I said, most people who come to me, they're usually spending all day, and it's gotten to the point where it's impacted their functioning. Meaning it's really relationship OCD, or just OCD in general, if it's impacting one's daily life. So that can include affecting your relationship. Maybe you're going through many, many different relationships, or you've broken up, gotten back together multiple times, but to the point where it has caused so much strain, not just in your relationship, but in your work. Maybe it's your school. Maybe it's your relationship with other people, because you're asking your friends constantly to reassure you. Now they're just kind of, you've kind of ostracized yourselves from them. You push people away from you. So, yes, we want to be careful not to, again, pathologize ourselves and say, yep, that's me. I got relationship OCD. I mean, One, of course, talk with a qualified therapist or talk with a therapist so they can get the right diagnosis. The Y box is an assessment that's used for OCD that can be helpful in diagnosing. But functioning is a really important component to recognizing if this is an actual disorder, one where we need to do treatment, one that's it's going to continue to get worse if we don't focus on this. The second one is distress. Distress and impairment, I'll kind of combine those together. So unlike kind of typical relationship concerns, which are all, again, very normal, relationship anxiety, which is normal when you're in a relationship, the obsessions and the compulsions in ROCD cause very significant distress. And that's where they interfere with your social, your occupational, personal functioning. So yes, it will impact your functioning, but it has to cause distress as well for it to be considered a diagnosis. So we want to think about the intensity of the obsessions. You know, sometimes we might get this, oh, am I sabotaging my relationship? But how intense is that mm-hmm. fear? Can we have that thought? Can we let it go? Can we sit with it? But if it's so intense, you know, I do use the kind of 0 to 10, very basic scale. Like, how distressing is this? For like 9s and 10s, that's something we really want to work on. Also, what's the frequency? You know, that DSM-5 says like, you know, more than 1 hour, but I do see that go very beyond that amount of time. And that's when our kind of thoughts, behaviors go beyond the just like the normal worries. It is really hard to know the difference sometimes between, you know, quote unquote normal and what's a disorder, but most people are able to tell when it's really disrupted other areas of their life and it just causes distress. So either way, it's something you can work on, you know, in therapy or in coaching, just to be more aware, because awareness is obviously the first step to all of it.
Right. So how is it impairing your life, right? Your relationship, your work, friendships, these different aspects of your life, and what is the severity of it? Can really determine if it's perhaps OCD or maybe anxiety. So what would you say relationship anxiety is compared to OCD?
It would be that it sounds like a watered down version of relationship OCD. Anxiety, of course, is worries, you know, concerns, doubts. And then I always look at anxiety in three components, right? There's the thoughts. So the cognitive aspect, you know, what are the worries? What are the thoughts? There's the physical sensations, because stress and anxiety manifest in our body. So are you getting headaches? Are you getting stomach aches? Do you feel tension in your muscles? Tension in your chest, right? Tension in your throat. So the third one is behaviors, which is the things we don't do because of our anxiety. And the things we don't do is very relevant, because are we avoiding activities? Are we avoiding conversations, confrontations, fights, important topics, important conversations to have with one's partner? And then the behaviors that we might do that are related to relationship anxiety are kind of like what I've shared with OCD, which is questioning a lot, asking partners to reassure us, of course. Relationship anxiety is a really common thing, I think, in younger generations now. One, because we put a lot of pressure in our relationships. We expect our partners to fulfill us. We expect our partners to hold a lot of roles. And in one way, that's important. I think it's really great that we value our relationships. And there's a lot of anxiety around the things that we value the most, right? Mm-hmm. Which is similar to like attachment theory, right? We're going to get most anxious about the things in our lives that we care the most about. Mm-hmm. So relationship anxiety looks like worrying about the thing we care most about, which is a lot of the times our relationships or a romantic relationship. So if you're having relationship anxiety, of course, one, to kind of be like aware of it, notice it, kind of, you know, I guess not try to change it right away. But most importantly, I know you've shared this before, is to not judge it either, to validate what you're feeling, because we know that shame or judgment is not going to change it. Makes a lot of sense to have anxiety about our future and our relationships, especially when there's more uncertainty there too.
Right. Thank you for explaining that. So just to kind of break this down a little bit further in relation to attachment theory specifically, you know, there's the four attachment styles. Obviously, secure attachments, even though you fall on a spectrum and no one's 100% secure, just
Mm-hmm.
want to preface and say that in every single session,
Yes.
you know, the insecure attachments specifically are going to experience this anxiety. So for anxious attachments, it can look like, okay, there's something happens, they feel the stress, the tension, and then they go into the anxious thinking, right? Like, oh my God, what if my partner leaves me? I have to fix this. I need to, you know, save this relationship. That's the anxiety that they're kind of experiencing. And they might even go into, you know, pursuing the partner, you know, trying to fix the relationship, trying to mend the argument. When does it turn into OCD? Like, when does that become an OCD experience?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, there's certainly some overlap between insecure attachment or anxious attachment with relationship anxiety or relationship OCD, mostly in the, I guess, the cognitive distress around it. So like the worries. But when I think it might be easier to answer this with like what the treatment would be, because we would want to understand where someone gathers or where they, how we can promote safety. So feelings of safety, you know, emotional safety, acceptance, appreciation in themselves, in their partner. And so I guess the complicated part is between both of these that overlap each other is that relationship anxiety and insecure attachment both look like both have a fear of uncertainty. Is my partner going to stay with me? Are they going to leave me? What I see in OCD specifically, which might be common in more insecure attachments or anxious attachments, of course, is this belief or just more kind of dysfunctional or not accurate beliefs about oneself, about the world, or about other people. That's kind of like the cognitive triad in CBT. So thinking, oh, I'm not lovable, I'm going to end up unhappy, or I'm going to end up alone. That actually is kind of, there's some similarities too with OCD. So we look at maladaptive cognitive processes, maybe an inflated sense of responsibility. Actually, that's a really big overlap. I think that for a lot of us, right, it's really common to put a lot of pressure on ourselves on who we're going to pick, versus the other person also playing a role in who they are too. We don't have control over who our partners are or who they decide to be in the future, or if their minds change about us or what they choose to do in their lives too, right?
Yeah.
So that inflated sense of responsibility, there's sometimes there's perfectionism we want to look out for, trying to do everything right in the relationship, trying to control our thoughts is another thing too. That can also be challenging too. And so all of these factors would likely exacerbate relationship anxiety because we're putting so much pressure on ourselves. And to all of that, I would say that is where I think it could be really helpful in coaching or in therapy to really work on emotional regulation skills, right?
Yeah.
Emotional regulation, and then even deeper self-esteem issues or self-worth, because that's how we know, right? That spectrum of insecure attachment is rooted in. Weird way to answer that, but.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, like I study the DSM-2. I don't use it anymore in my coaching work that I do with clients, but it's so nuanced, right? Because it's like, there's so many overlaps in, okay, what is a disorder versus what is perhaps just the anxiety that you're experiencing. So I think just kind of asking yourself, well, what is the severity? How often are you doing it? How long is it lasting? Like you said, is it really impairing your relationship in different aspects of your life? So I think that severity question and really being mindful of that is really important to kind of, you know, navigate or judge where you're operating from. And so I guess my question for you, and so going back to dismissive avoidance, okay. And I know you mentioned before our call, Holly, that, you know, you didn't really learn too much about attachment theory
right.
in the graduate program. Same with me. I think we took like one class mentioned, you know, some of it,
right.
But it's interesting. It's really interesting that now it's becoming so highly regarded and relatable to so many people. So, but anyways, going back to dismissive avoidance. So let's just say, right, something happens, they experience stress. And then their anxiety, you know, can look like, I need to leave this situation. This, you know, you're suffocating me too much. You're pressuring me too much. I need to leave. What would you say is an example of like an OCD experience with dismissive avoidance?
The only similarity I might be able to find is that there's still kind of that might, there's still like a mental compulsion there. By mental compulsion, meaning you're doing something to relieve your anxiety, like in a pattern or as a cycle. So maybe it's a distraction, or maybe it is analyzing it. It is a bit different than the OCD, because we can, it's most of the time it's easy to see what it is. Like, this is what site I go to, or this is exactly who I talk to. In the short term, it relieves our anxiety, but in the long term, it increases it. With dismissive avoidance specifically, we're just like pushing it down deeper and deeper, or we are just not addressing confrontation. So there's just that natural emotional avoidance of our feelings. And relationship OCD, there's a lot of distress there. And then we relieve it. So technically running away from the situation or walking away or not addressing it is part of the cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Where in the short term, hey, I feel great. In the short term, that's what I did. I'm following what my body wants, or I'm following what my mind needs, and I'm honoring what it needs. Feels great. And it's also making the problem worse because we're not addressing the feeling there. Maybe we're numbing ourselves, right? So that's where, if I see that pattern in my clients, it's really important to address that, to make space for what we're feeling. At the same time, I'm also work as a couples therapist. So when I'm noticing these kind of attachment styles, or I'm noticing, you know, of course, someone with more avoidant style versus someone with, you know, who's with someone who is anxious, I'll try to really help both partners see the importance of making space for their emotions and their feelings in the room. And when one partner, right, usually the one who falls more on the avoidant style, they need breaks. We need to be able to take timeouts, right? If we're flooded, if the temperature is really high, it's not going to be productive too. So taking breaks, we just want those breaks and those timeouts to be productive. We need to have, so like the rule is timeouts are really great if you're in a fight with your partner, but you have to have a time for when you're going to come back. Otherwise, the person with the more anxious style attachment is just going to be like, they're just going to be gutted, right? This might even be stonewalling. If someone walks away and says, sorry, I'm not going to deal with this, that's really unfair to the other partner. We need to set a time for when you're going to come back. Maybe it's 10 minutes. Maybe it's later on the evening or the next day. Always have a time back. So there is definitely ways that folks who fall more in the avoidant style and folks on the anxious style can kind of compromise and find a way where they can kind of match each other.
Yeah, it's so similar. So like when I, you know, treat my patients with my clients, I always
get those sure, you do both, right?
It's confusing. The therapy and the coaching. Like with my clients, when I'm treating them with the relationship anxiety, for instance, it's so similar, right? Like being present with what's coming up for you, what those emotions are, not running away from them or having to do something about it impulsively. And then work right the emotional regulation piece, but also the CBT part, right? Like really challenging what's coming up for you. So it sounds like if you're treating anxiety, you're also kind of treating the OCD perhaps, or what would you say? I know there's a lot of similarities, but anything like specifically different for OCD in terms of treatment?
Yeah. So the main difference would be we wouldn't want to treat if it's severe relationship OCD, right? If we found that to be the diagnosis, we wouldn't want to use just CBT, right? Sometimes there's a combination. The reason being, if we just use CBT, so say we're trying to find more functional, more realistic thoughts, we might actually be increasing our compulsions. Mm-hmm. With relationship and anxiety, we might have distorted thoughts. Oh, I'm unlovable. Or, oh, my partner is going to leave me. And we will try to find more realistic thoughts. We look for the evidence for and against those thoughts, just to have a more realistic, more balanced mindset, of course. But in relationship OCD, that's actually not going to solve it. That's going to be like a short-term kind of band-aid. It's going to work for the time being, but those thoughts are just going to come back even more intensely. Again, I like to think of OCD, again, as this like cyclical, it's really invasive cycle, right? You have the obsession, the intrusive thought, then you have anxiety, then you relieve that anxiety with a compulsion, you feel great, and then it comes back. With relationship anxiety, a lot of the times there is not that cyclical. So CBT would not be as wouldn't be as efficient. CBT might work in the short term. So that's where exposure therapy comes in. We call this exposure and response prevention, ERP. This is where ERP is going to be really effective because we're going to gradually expose them to their fears without engaging in the compulsive behavior. So we're going to break that cycle. We're going to think about that. We're going to use scripts. We're going to use imaginal exposures, sometimes in vivo exposures where we're going to we're not going to relieve the anxiety right away. We're kind of telling, and I used to use this when I worked with kids, but it actually works really well with adults. But this analogy or this metaphor of the OCD monster or bully, I'll have people really imagine like, who is that person in your head? And if it's a bully, they're saying, you're not lovable, or your partner's going to leave you. You're making the worst decision ever. You're going to be unhappy. And to that bully, if we say, no, that's not true. I'm picking the right person. Look at all this stuff that I just read about, and look at my diary entries. I do love them. They love that, right? The bully is saying, yep, I got under your skin. You're trying so hard. You're working against me. But if we say to the bully, yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe this person is great for me right now, and maybe they won't be good for me later. Right now, it's working out really great. The bully doesn't really get fed. They're kind of like, oh, okay, like whatever. I guess you're not that affected by me. So we call that like starving the monster, starving the bully. We don't want to feed it with all of our attempts to feel better.
Yes.
So ERP, really great. Those are exposures. It's challenging. That's why it's really important to work with a professional, someone who's trained in ERP. And then, of course, I'll say, working with, if your OCD is severe enough, it can be a really useful tool to have an SSRI, so medication. So working with a provider who prescribes, mostly because I've had folks who have done just ERP when they started sertraline, that's, an SSRI, Zoloft, right, was the other name. ERP became a lot more effective. So just recognizing medication as a tool and working with the right provider can be really efficient too. And it doesn't have to be long term either. But that's really the gold standard evidence-based treatment is ERP for relationship OCD or for OCD.
Got it. Got it. Okay. I mean, and so much of that too is just the mindfulness piece, like just being present in the moment. I love that you said, with this analogy with the monster, like what we resist persists, like even telling ourselves a
Amen.
different story, like, nope, it's all going to work out. It's all fine. I mean, sometimes that does work, but I can see when you're engaging in that compulsive cycle where that can just feed the monster, I guess. So just kind of surrendering to the experience and being like, I don't know, and I'm just choosing to be okay with right now and what I have.
And again, right, I love that saying, if what you resist persists. And when our distress levels are through the roof, we might not be able to embrace or surrender. So we'll work up to it, right? So maybe we're just tolerating how horrible or how uncomfortable this is. And if we can tolerate it just like a little bit more today and then a little bit more tomorrow, even if it's just like 1%, we can get there. And then maybe we can get to the point where we can surrender and we can just embrace the unknown and the excitement of uncertainty. But for now, maybe it's just being okay with tolerating it, right? I think that there's a gradual approach to it too. It's tough. Again, depending on where you are on the spectrum of relationship anxiety to relationship OCD.
Yeah, and Holly, I have to say that has helped me so much. A therapy approach that I really, really like is ACT, acceptance and
Oh,
commitment
yes, love
therapy,
it.
because so much of it is just accepting what is. And that has helped me so much in terms of, because again, it's the anxiety of, oh my God, am I in the right relationship? Should we keep going? Is there someone better? And then you go into like comparing yourself to others, especially with Instagram. It's like the whole
Oh
cycle, the whole thing.
so much. There's so much out there. We really haven't made for ourselves to have all the anxiety about this. So it's important to recognize those triggers. But love that you mentioned ACT or ACT. I actually have a colleague who's doing like think a randomized control trial on ACT for OCD now. And so ACT is relatively new, right? Which is from CBT. And that's a really great tool for relationship anxiety as well. And it might be helpful for relationship OCD too. I think the mindfulness component can be a really great distraction from engaging in compulsions. And we don't want to always distract and avoid, but when it's useful and productive, it can be a really great way to just delay the compulsion. And I'll tell folks too, like, if they're like, I have to ask my partner this question, or I have to confess, right? Confessions are, it's a really common compulsion as well. Can we just delay it for 5 seconds? Can you sit with it 10 seconds? Tomorrow, can we delay it for a minute, an hour? And so that's another way too, like, you're going to be able to, you're going to do it, but let's just delay it. Again, that's kind of building that tolerance too. And ACT does a really good job in helping us with like that unknown, the mindfulness component of it. The whole idea of being flexible, right? Having psychological flexibility is a really useful tool in overall anxiety. So I love that you brought that up too.
Psychological flexibility. I love that. And I want to be mindful of your time. I have one other question that I wanted to ask you. This is someone in my Instagram community. They wanted to know, how do you know if something is OCD or, and I guess you kind of already explained this, but let's just say anxiety or OCD, and what is perhaps your intuition? Like, how do you know if it's truth or if it's like OCD and you should be analyzing and thinking about it?
Oh, it's so tricky. I mean, this is where it's really left to our own devices. We're just going to find ourselves in that spiral or overanalyzing. So I do think it's helpful to work with someone like you, like a coach or with a therapist, and have that, really have someone help you with the assessment or diagnosis of relationship anxiety or OCD specifically. I do know a lot of folks who will attempt to diagnose themselves with OCD. That's a big thing now, right? Kind of self-diagnostics, like, you know, either it's autism spectrum, ADHD, and one that can be helpful. We can advocate for ourselves, we can get help, but really important to not over pathologize ourselves again, because that can keep us stuck as well. And we could, there's a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy confirmation bias to our symptoms. So to that, I would say, talk with a professional about it. That will be helpful. And, you know, the part about intuition, which is really tricky, our intuition is a really important part of ourselves, right? We want to be able to trust our gut and ourselves. And when we have relationship anxiety, especially when it's severe, and if we meet the criteria for relationship OCD, our intuition kind of meter, unfortunately, is not working properly. That's a really important thing to recognize too. Again, if you have the diagnosis and if that's already been determined, unfortunately, our intuition is something that we have to relearn again, because the amygdala and the parts of our brain, right, including the prefrontal cortex, all of those parts of our brain are very activated. So we're going to be looking for threats. We're going to be naturally trying to protect ourselves. So our intuition may feel like it's accurate, but it is also the protective part of our brain that's saying danger, alert. So there is a difficulty in recognizing the difference. Another thing I'll add quickly is that it can be really important to just self-monitor for a week. That really looks like almost like a chain analysis of when you experience the trigger, the obsession, and then looking for, again, doing this with a therapist is most productive, of course, looking for themes. So, oh, I realize I get the most triggered when I'm on this Instagram page, or when I'm watching a, you know, Too Hot to Handle. I don't know. I was just thinking of some, like, a lot of hot bodies. I'm thinking about those people on, do I not love my partner, or am I not good enough for my partner? Oh, interesting. We might be able to find some themes and just kind of like get those out of the way right off the bat. And then I would like for folks to also kind of recognize or pay attention to what their behaviors are after. Am I engaging in behaviors that increase my anxiety in the long run? Am I sitting with it? Is my distress levels really high? So I think there's like three things I would like people to kind of pay attention to, or even keep track of, at least for a week. So what the trigger was, what the thought was, or the intrusive thought specifically, what was my behavior afterwards? We want to check to see if these are considered compulsions, and then how distressing was that from 0 to 10. Sometimes people use 0 to 100. what themes do we have here? What can we work on? Are there any exposures I can do even on my own or with my coach? Can I do some imaginal exposures? The idea of imaginal exposures is we can tolerate the distress of that imaginary situation, or maybe it is watching Too Hot to Handle on purpose to kind of train yourself for that uncertainty, right? To tolerate that being uncomfortable. So again, it's very nuanced and it's different for each person, which is why it's really important to tailor treatment in therapy.
I love that. So building the tolerance, that psychological flexibility, emotional regulation, because you're right, when you've been exposed, when you have been operating from that, you know, fight, flight, freeze response for so long, we sometimes, like, our intuition is not perhaps correct. Like, I have to say it, right? So it's, in order to really regulate ourselves, it's kind of having to relearn what is safety in our bodies in order to make more logical and, you know, precise decisions, well-informed decisions about what we're experiencing. So I appreciate you mentioning that. How can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm holly.phd.com. Actually, sorry, it's just hollyphd. And my Instagram is holly.phd.com. I have some resources there on my Instagram page and then also on my website. And starting a new podcast with my twin sister. We're Twin Minds Unwind right now. We talk about various topics in clinical psychologists. So we're the Twin Minds Unwind podcast. We're both psychologists. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on this show. I want to add too, for the people listening, I think it's so fun that we're both wearing the same outfit, the same sweaters, very similar to each other. It's just been fun looking back at you.
I know. I'm like looking at a mirror right now. And then you it's have perfect. Your, I think your diploma behind you.
Yeah. Right? We're very similar right now. I love it. It's been really
fun. That's great. So thank you so much, Holly. Thank you so much for your expertise, your wisdom. I think this information is going to be really clarifying for a lot of people. I know it was for me. And I will catch you on Instagram or one of these platforms.
Yeah, it's so nice to chat again. Bye. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope that you got some amazing insights from this conversation. If you're interested in learning about ways to work with me on a one-on-one basis or through my self-study e-course, My Secure Self, you can explore those options further within the links in the show notes. Sending you all the love and courage moving forward. See you next time.